Now, those who worry about where Russia's heading today remember what it was like during the repressive years, the Soviet era. Even playing some types of music could get you into trouble. Michael May has the story of one man, Oleg Lundstrom, who faced down Soviet pressure to build a career in jazz.
75! Это все-таки мало!
The Oleg Lundstrom Orchestra was in full swing at the 75th anniversary celebration of an electronics corporation, held in a large theater housed inside the factory itself. A factory auditorium might seem like an odd place for jazz, but in the world of 1990s Russian jazz, having a factory as your patron is one way to survive. And if Oleg Lundstrom has been anything throughout his 82 years, it's a survivor. Lundstrom's home is, by Moscow standards, a spacious apartment given to him by the Soviet government 3 years after Stalin's death. In recognition of a career, Lundstrom says, began as a teenager in Manchuria, where his father was working on the Chinese-Russian railroad.
I started to be acquainted with jazz from 1932, and I finished the school. But, of course, I look at the jazz just as a dance music. And when I was trying to buy some records just for dancing, I came to the store and I took a record. Nobody knew at that time. Duke Ellington and his orchestra. I came home and was astonished. There's something different, not only for dancing.
That record was Dear Old Southland, and Lundstrom painstakingly transcribed the arrangement for a few friends.
Then I called my friends, let's try. They tried, no, that's not that. Then another tried, then one of the musicians said, let's make big band. Everybody said, yes, okay, but who'll be the leader? And somebody, even I don't remember who, said, Oleg. And so I became a leader, like that.
The band eventually grew to 9 members and became so popular in Manchuria, the musicians decided to try their luck in Shanghai, then home to an international jazz scene. Over the next decade, the band grew to a 19-piece orchestra, and the players sharpened their chops alongside accomplished bands from America and Europe. By 1944, the Oleg Lundstrom Orchestra was the house band at the posh Paramount Ballroom, the choicest gig in Shanghai. At the end of World War II, the Lundstrom Orchestra was invited to play at a Soviet victory gala. Though he made his reputation interpreting American music, Lundstrom thought twice about drawing from that repertoire for this gig.
I thought, but what to play? Because the Cold War at that time, I cannot play Ellington. I adore him, but I must write something myself. And so I wrote Interlude.
Lundstrom based his very first composition on a theme by a Russian, Rachmaninoff. After the war, the Lundstrom Orchestra, eager to continue its successful career back home, drove from Shanghai to Moscow in 2 old American cars to play at the famous Metropole Hotel. That's the story that Frederick Starr tells in Red and Hot, A History of Soviet Jazz. But Starr says that the musicians got a less than warm reception.
3 members of his orchestra reported on their one-night stand at the Moscow Hotel, and they played one night and they had a great time, and the next day they were told, you're never going to play here again, get out of town.
The Lundstrom Orchestra was lucky. While other jazz musicians were sent to prison camps for playing decadent American music, Lundstrom's band was banished to Kazan, a provincial town to the east of Moscow. But Lundstrom tells a different story. He maintains he chose Kazan.
I never thought that somebody pressed me, because, for instance, we give concert in Kazan. Even the Minister of Culture comes, he claps. Yes, he appreciates music. And I thought, if the people who says we don't want jazz and he appreciates jazz, it means that we are doing what we must do.
Frederick Starr thinks that Lundstrom has reason to selectively edit his personal history.
You have to understand, the Lundstrom brothers became the establishment, and the late Soviet era was very good to them. The 70s and 80s, you know, they had all the solid old babas still grooving to their music when the rest of the world had moved on and was listening to rock. That's why they were in Kazan. No one would volunteer to go to Kazan from Shanghai. I mean, get real, as they say. They did well. They turned it to a plus. And it's perfectly understandable that he might soft-pedal any complicated aspects of the experience.
To understand both sides of the story, it's important to note that Starr was a foreign policy advisor to Presidents Reagan and Bush. To Starr, the perseverance of jazz, even at the height of Stalin's repression, proved that popular culture had the potential to foster democracy.
The story that inheres in the fate of jazz in the Soviet Union is how the revolution from below, in this case jazz, in the end, completely subverted, undermined, and triumphed over every attempt to reshape values from above.
But Oleg Lundstrom wants to be remembered as a composer and conductor, not a dissident. He says his success had less to do with subversion than it did with perseverance.
Everybody asked me, how is it? Was Stalin at that time? He hated jazz music in America. But we never played American. We played only Ellington, something of Basie, the best, one or two pieces. And the rest was Tartar and the Russian songs. And nobody could say that we play American jazz. We don't play American jazz. We play our jazz.
In a country as tumultuous as Russia, it's not unusual to find vastly different interpretations of historical events. Jeff Brooks, author of Thank You, Comrade Stalin, a book on Soviet popular culture, says in the case of Lundstrom and Starr, both perspectives are valid.
During points of the Cold War, when dissidents were being persecuted, it was quite natural for Soviet jazzmen to construct their experience in terms of that narrative. But once it was all over, another story could appear in which they were just making music. One of the marvels of history is that it's retold and retold and retold.
However Lundstrom's story is told, in the end his life is documented by his music.
Jazz, it must be the music of the whole world. Nevertheless, American or Swedish or something else, jazz belongs to the whole world. That's my opinion.
For NPR News, I'm Michael May.